This is Free Speech Radio News. It's Wednesday, November 9, 2005. From the studios of KPFK in Los Angeles, I'm Aura Bogado. The Senate rejects the creation of an independent panel to investigate the treatment of detainees. And top oil executives are in Washington explaining what they'll do with their record-breaking profits. These stories and more after these headlines.
I'm Shannon Young with the headlines for Free Speech Radio News. A secret burial was held today for the Iraqi trial lawyer who was gunned down yesterday in Baghdad. Adil al-Subaidi is the second defense attorney murdered from the legal team in the Saddam Hussein trial. After Subaidi's burial, the defense team announced they no longer recognize the jurisdiction of the court and will now refuse to participate in the trial's proceedings. Iraq's Deputy Prime Minister Ahmed Chalabi is in Washington, D.C., where he met earlier today with Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. Chalabi has been accused of handing over faulty intelligence on weapons of mass destruction in the run-up to the invasion of Iraq. Iraq's Vice President is also in Washington today. Meanwhile, the Iraqi president is in Italy this week on an official visit. Diletta Varlese reports from Brescia.
During a meeting yesterday with Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi, Iraqi President Jalal Talabani said that he wants Italian troops to remain in Iraq for now. Berlusconi said yesterday that Italy was against war and that he had tried to persuade Bush and Blair not to invade in 2003. Italian troops did not participate in the invasion of Iraq, but were later deployed for the ongoing occupation. Berlusconi said Italian troops are in the country not for war, but for a peacekeeping mission. Iraq's president thanked Berlusconi for the Italian military presence and asked him not to withdraw before the end of 2006. Italy will hold national election in April of 2006. Romano Prodi, the center-left presidential candidate, met with Talabani and said that if his coalition wins the upcoming election, Italy will start a gradual withdrawal of its troops from Iraq. For FSRN, Diletta Varlese, Italy.
In France, riots have persisted after 13 consecutive nights, despite the recent declaration of a state of emergency and the implementation of curfews in a number of areas throughout the country. Interior Minister Nicolas Sarkozy told Parliament today that foreign nationals found guilty of participating in the riots will be subject to summary deportation. India and Pakistan today opened a second crossing point in the heavily militarized line of control in Kashmir. 1 month after the disaster, the two sides have agreed to open 5 points along the 742-kilometer line of control. In Srinagar, Shanawaz Khan has more.
At command post in Udi, the event was low-key as compared to the opening of the crossing point at Chakandabad on Monday. There were no civilians near the venue. Only relief goods were exchanged between the two sides. Command post made history earlier this year when the passengers of the first Trans-Kashmir bus crossed a newly erected bridge along the line of control at this point in April. Today, the bridge lies damaged, and the Trans-Kashmir bus has been suspended. Officials from both sides exchanged relief material under the bridge today in a symbolic gesture of solidarity. The Srinagar-Muzaffarabad road that was badly damaged by the October 8 earthquake has been cleared on the Indian side, while landslides still block the road on the Pakistani side. Authorities on the two sides have yet to clear any of the applicants for crossing the line of control. No civilians were allowed to cross today. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Shahnawaz Khan.
The U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments today in a consolidated states' rights case, which will decide if state-held prisoners can sue for monetary damages under the Federal Americans with Disabilities Act. Greg Gorman reports from Washington, D.C.
The Supreme Court heard oral arguments on Wednesday in Goodman v. Georgia and Georgia v. United States. In the combined cases, a paraplegic Georgia state prisoner accuses a state-operated prison for violations of the Americans with Disabilities Act for failure to provide handicapped facilities, patient privileges, or proper medical access. The justices will decide if the Americans with Disabilities Act is applicable within a state-operated prison system, and will rule on whether discrimination cases brought against individual states should be granted immunity if they are found to be in violation of a federal act. This will be the first time that new Chief Justice John Roberts will hear a specific case regarding the sovereign rights of state governments over the federal government. A decision in the case is expected early next year. For Free Speech Radio News in Washington, D.C., I'm Gregory Gorman.
And I'm Shannon Young for Free Speech Radio News.
The Senate rejected a measure last night that would have created an independent panel modeled after the 9/11 Commission to investigate the Bush administration's treatment of detainees. Congress is still buzzing over several outstanding issues, from detainee abuse to secret CIA prisons to investigating whether the Bush administration misled the public into war. And one committee is at the center of it all, the Senate Intelligence Committee. Mitch Jezerich brings us this update from Capitol Hill.
This week, the Senate Intelligence Committee got off to a rocky start in its Phase 2 investigation into whether the White House manipulated intelligence in the lead-up to the invasion of Iraq. The senators on the bipartisan panel, created after a shutdown of the Senate last week by Democratic Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid, indicated on Monday that they are split among party lines on how to proceed in the investigation. But the chair of the committee, Republican Pat Roberts, said progress was made after meeting today.
We're unified in purpose. We have a common plan, and that we will move forward.
How much progress is questionable. The ranking Democrat on the committee, Jay Rockefeller, told reporters that while today's meeting was more civil, differences on how to investigate the administration still exist. Meanwhile, House Speaker Dennis Hastert and Senate Leader Bill Frist are calling for the intelligence committees in both chambers of Congress to investigate the CIA leak. No, not of Valerie Plame, but how the Washington Post found out that the CIA allegedly runs prison camps in Eastern Europe. Chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee Pat Roberts says he'll let the Justice Department investigate first before launching his own inquiry.
Well, by law, the CIA must refer to the Justice Department any leak investigation that they deem at odds with our national security. And so that's what they're doing. So it is going to the Justice Department, and the precedent in the intelligence committees on both sides has been, once the Justice Department starts its investigation, we will wait on that. And then if there is reason to continue any kind of investigation, we would do it.
Neither White House officials nor top lawmakers will confirm or deny whether the CIA is running secret detention camps worldwide. Much information the public finds out concerning its intelligence agency, however, comes from governmental leaks. So Free Speech Radio News asked Roberts whether he felt the public had the right to know whether the Post article is true.
I just can't talk about this subject at this time.
How about just the right that, I mean, should the public know all that stuff? Because, I mean, beyond whether or not those...
Generally, in terms of the work we do on the Intelligence Committee, if it is not classified and under a national security situation, I think the public does have a right to know. But I just can't comment on this at this time.
Do you think we will eventually?
Probably.
Republican Senator Trent Lott has indicated that he believes the leak occurred when Vice President Dick Cheney addressed the Senate Republicans on November 2nd about the issue. That was the same day Cheney came to the Hill to pressure Congress to exempt the CIA from anti-torture legislation. Lott says he believes a senator then told a staff member who then went to the Washington Post. If Lott's assessment is true, it would certainly suggest that the U.S. is indeed running secret jails around the world. Mitch Jezerich, Free Speech Radio News, Washington.
The already tense relations between Chile and Peru have been complicated by the surprise arrival of former Peruvian President Alberto Fujimori in Chile's capital. The former leader is wanted on more than 20 charges that include corruption and human rights abuses. And as FSRN's Jorge Garretón explains, Fujimori wants a trial in Chile before going to Peru to contest next April's presidential election.
The tense relations between Chile and Peru got testier with Fujimori's surprising arrival Sunday from Japan. Fujimori's charter plane left his self-imposed exile in Japan, made an hour stop over in Tijuana, Mexico, and arrived early Sunday afternoon in Santiago. Fujimori's arrival embarrassed Chilean officials because customs officers failed to execute an international warrant for his arrest. Once here, the government promptly advised Peruvian officials. Peru asked that a bilateral treaty for wanted criminals be enforced. In the early hours of Monday morning, Fujimori was arrested pending the arrival of an extradition order. But why is Fujimori in Santiago? His lawyer, Cesar Nakasaki, says Chilean courts give him guarantees and protection because Chile's Supreme Court rarely extradites wanted criminals to other countries. In fact, two former Fujimori advisors successfully fought off extraditions back to Lima. Nakasaki says Fujimori wants an expedited extradition hearing because it reduces the charges and it forces Peru to lay charges common to both Peruvian and Chilean law. Nakasaki adds Chile is the only place Fujimori can get a fair trial because Peru does not respect the rule of law.
Our investigation has shown that all legal proceedings in Peru have a systematic violation of the right to proper defense on two grounds. First, when the law demanded that a lawyer be appointed, it was not. And when they were appointed late in the hearing, all the lawyers had a similar pattern of action. They never attended any hearing, never acted on behalf of the defendant Fujimori. So then, the conclusion is that, in those 21 proceedings, they be stricken from Fujimori's record, because the right to a proper defense was never followed.
Fujimori believes he can get a fair trial here, but his presence has rarefied the tense relations between Chile and Peru. Last week, Peru's Congress passed legislation seeking to redraw the sea border it shares with Chile. That move was the latest and most serious of a number of irritants that have plagued the bilateral relations in the past 2 years. Chilean President Ricardo Lagos, in a statement to the nation, says he hopes Fujimori's presence does not cloud relations further.
I hope this issue of former President Fujimori does not become an obstacle in the bilateral relations with Peru. I also hope this does not turn into a major difficulty in the conflicting points of view we have with our borders in the Pacific Ocean.
Santiago is awash with Peruvian officials and Lima-based human rights activists. The place of detention has become a focal point for the Peruvian press and members of the large immigrant Peruvian community, protesting his presence and demands that he be sent to Lima. And in Lima, Chile's embassy has become a battleground between protesters and supporters of Fujimori. To further complicate matters, the Vice President of Peru, David Wiseman, accused Chile of acting like clowns in letting Fujimori into the country. It is that kind of rhetoric that worries University of Chile political scientist Guillermo Holzman.
This situation has been forced towards an extradition hearing that must meet the legal and jurisdictional test of Chilean courts, and that is a minor issue. If the extradition is not granted, it will create powerful political backlash here in Chile and in Peru. If extradition is granted, then Peru has another problem because Fujimori will be there. This extradition hearing will be expedited, so events are playing into Fujimori's strategy beyond the charges he faces.
Fujimori has given Chile a large headache. Peru wants him back and soon, so he can be tried in a Lima court. And to further complicate matters, Japan sent a note asking about the treatment of a Japanese citizen named Alberto Fujimori. Just as Chile and Japan are in the middle of free trade talks. For FSRN, this is Jorge Garretón in Santiago.
Voters headed to the polls from coast to coast yesterday, deciding on local, county, and state candidates and initiatives. There was little surprise in New York, where Republican incumbent Mayor Mike Bloomberg beat Fernando Ferrer. But Republicans had a tough time in gubernatorial elections in both Virginia and New Jersey, and in California, where every ballot initiative endorsed by Republican Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger was defeated. FSRN's Rebecca Miles brings us this cross-country election wrap-up.
In New York, billionaire Mayor Michael Bloomberg was re-elected over Democratic challenger Fernando Ferrer by a margin of 59% to 39%. The New York race was the most expensive in non-presidential campaign U.S. history, with Bloomberg spending up to $100 million in his re-election, 10 times the amount spent by his opponent. In New Jersey and Virginia, Democrats won both gubernatorial races. In New Jersey, Democratic Senator John Corzine beat Republican businessman Doug Forrester with 53% of the vote, a 10% lead higher than was forecast in polls last week. Both contests featured record spending and lots of political fisticuffs. John Corzine on his victory.
We can and we will and we must provide health coverage for the 265,000 uninsured kids in this state. And we do that together. We can and we will set high standards in education from preschool to the medical school, because every classroom in New Jersey should give every young person the same access at the American promise that I've had and you've had, and we'll deliver that for every child.
In Virginia, Lieutenant Governor Tim Kaine beat Republican Jerry Kilgore in a close-run race despite last-minute campaigning by President Bush for his opponent. Some Democrats claim that Bush's appearance at an election eve rally for Kilgore got more voters out for Kaine, who won by 5 percentage points. The race was considered the most expensive in the state's history. Kaine, the former lieutenant governor, promised to enforce death sentences if elected, and he opposes abortion on religious grounds, but has pledged to oppose new barriers to women seeking abortions. In California, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's efforts to reshape the state government were rejected during a special election that saw all four of his ballot proposals rejected by voters. The measures included lengthening the amount of required experience before a teacher can receive tenure and requiring unions to hold votes before their dues can be used for political purposes. California Assembly Speaker Fabian Nunes on last night's victory.
The voters said no to the politics of division and yes to us working together. They said no to governing by initiative and yes to accountability to the people.
In Texas, voters passed a constitutional ban on same-sex marriage, making their state the 19th to take that step. Gay rights leaders were dismayed by the outcome but vowed to continue a state-by-state battle for recognition of same-sex unions. Jerry Simono, partner with the Houston law firm Neckman, Simono and Fry, on the new law.
This law is so crazy that nobody can even understand exactly what that second paragraph means. What does it mean when they say that this state can't recognize anything similar or identical to marriage? Well, if you talk to someone who is a philosophy student, they'll tell you that logically anything is identical to itself, and so marriage is identical to itself. Is this a null marriage?
Howard Dean, head of the Democratic Party, says voters want the nation to go in a different way, believing the Republican politics had an effect on yesterday's results. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Rebecca Miles in New York.
4 years after the G8 summit in Genoa, the Diaz trial, in which 28 policemen are accused, comes to a pivotal point as the first testimony was heard. During the violent raid on the Genoa Social Forum and the Indy Media buildings, over 90 people were arrested. All 90 were later released with no charges filed. At least 62 people suffered injuries after police savagely beat them. FSRN's Manuela Aldabe is at the trial, where she spoke with Mr. Pagani, who represents Lena Zouk, who gave his testimony to the court today.
Today, 9 November, was the 8th hearing of the Diaz trial, but it was the first time that the court has heard witness testimony. 100 police officers rioted the school and began to beat everyone. Of the 93 people there, 60 were arrested and 30 were hospitalized with broken arms or legs broken. So the trial is against the chief of the police who were inside because it was not possibility to identify the officers who had really beaten the people. No one of the beating victims were able to identify officers involved in the raid because the police were wearing face covering. What is known is that the police were from Rome. Lena Zulke from Germany, the first witness to testify. She was inside the school when the police arrived. After the beating, Zulke was placed in intensive care with broken ribs that had pierced and collapsed one of her lungs.
When the police arrived, I was in a classroom where I was about to go to sleep, and I heard people screaming and shouting and noise, so I went to the window to look out of the window and saw police rushing into the courtyard and slowly entering the school. They started hitting with the batons on my head and shoulders. I fell on the ground and lay with the back turned to them, so then they started kicking in my back and on my legs and hitting with the sticks on my head and arms and ribs. I could hear them breaking immediately.
Maurizio Miscia is the defense attorney for the accused police officers. After today's testimony, Free Speech Radio News asked him to explain the reason for the raid on the conversion centers.
Ci fosse la presenza di un congruo numero di Black Bloc.
There were a lot of people from the Black Bloc. Also, the Genoa Social Forum organization said this to the police by phone.
Dichiarazione telefonica.
The next hearing is scheduled for November 16. Attorneys say the trial is likely to go on for 5 years and will hear testimony from over 250 people. For Free Speech Radio News, I am Manuela Aldabe from Genova.
President Bush told Brazilian President Lula da Silva that the U.S. is willing to cut farm subsidies if the Europeans do the same. As the stalemate continues over the question of farm subsidies, the Senate recently agreed to extend the current regime of farm subsidies to 2011, which were first set to expire in 2007. Meanwhile, U.S. agriculture officials have been traveling to 48 states asking farmers for input on the 2007 Farm Bill. FSRN's Lee Robartes reports from the Farm Bill Forum hosted by Agriculture Secretary Michael Johans in Washington State.
The USDA Farm Bill Forum was held at Eastern Washington University in the town of Cheney, surrounded by miles of wheat fields in all directions. U.S. Agriculture Secretary Mike Johans heard farmers and others in the ag sector say farmers need assistance now. Farm chemical dealer Alex McGregor quoted Senator Pat Roberts of Kansas saying growers are facing a Category 5 hurricane of fuel and fertilizer prices.
I'm not sure what homeland security means, but the ability to produce homegrown food that meets exacting regulatory standards while maintaining extraordinary resources that allow us to efficiently feed fellow Americans and people around the globe should rank high in the equation.
McGregor noted a faded 2001 clipping with President Bush saying agriculture will no longer be traded away or ignored when we sit down at international negotiating tables. Many farmers, however, think their livelihoods will be traded away at World Trade Organization negotiations. Washington Association of Wheat Growers President Jeff Emptman noted statements that the next farm bill would have to be WTO compliant.
Keep in mind that the WTO doesn't represent fair trade, though it is supposed to be a move towards free trade. Don't sell out the American farmer in order to be WTO compliant. Our producers are stewards of their land and give great consideration to our environment, human rights, human safety, and national security, while producers in some of our competing countries don't.
Secretary Johans, however, emphasized the importance of trade, reminding Washington state growers that, like it or not, they are part of a billion-dollar export industry in the Northwest. He noted that U.S. farm productivity is increasing at a rate of 2% per year, while domestic consumption is growing less than 1%. Johans says he feels strongly that if export markets are going to be available, we'll have to level the playing field.
And so if we truly are going to get a level playing field, we've got to bring tariffs down. We call it market access, but that's really what we're doing. Plus, we've got to get a more level playing field in terms of the subsidy program.
It's not just lack of markets that's putting farmers out of business. There's concerns that federal payments for environmental programs such as Conservation Reserve and Endangered Species may not be fully funded because of Katrina. There's also big agriculture, according to teenager Lauren Credle of Washington 4-H, who hopes to be a fourth-generation farmer.
But we are being squeezed out by businesses, huge global companies, who dictate our input of prices as well as the prices we receive for our crops and livestock.
There was an attempt last week to fix this. The same day as the forum, the U.S. Senate was voting down an amendment by Senator Charles Grassley of Iowa to limit farm subsidies to $250,000 a year per married couple. Grassley argued that a cap was needed because large ag corporations are using excess subsidies to drive smaller farmers out of business. But Southern rice and cotton interests, as well as the American Farm Bureau, lobbied strongly against it. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Lee Robartis in Cheney, Washington.
Top oil industry executives testified today before the Senate Committee on Energy and Natural Resources on how they plan to use their profits. They defended themselves against accusations, but agreed that the U.S. should work on developing alternative energy sources. Anastasia Nestitska reports from Washington, D.C.
CEOs of some of the world's richest oil companies shared their vision of oil supply, refining capacity, and what they consider to be desirable governmental policies at this morning's Senate committee hearing. Lee Raymond, CEO of ExxonMobil Corporation, outlined the way his company is dealing with its record $9.9 billion profits for the third quarter.
Our numbers are huge because the scale of our industry is huge. How are these earnings used? We invest to run our global operations, to develop future supply, to advance energy producing and saving technologies, and to meet our obligations to millions of our shareholders. In fact, over the last 10 years, ExxonMobil's cumulative capital and exploration expenditures exceeded our cumulative annual earnings.
Senator Boxer from California expressed doubts about whether all the profits of oil companies are invested in exploration. She explained by using a chart with the salaries of industry executives.
Mr. Mulva, your bonus was a little over $4 million on top of your $1.5 million salary and $2.7 million in stock gains and other compensation. This compares to an average American who makes $23,276 per year. Each of your bonuses was more than 155 times greater than the typical American's yearly salary. Compare your bonuses to a worker on minimum wage, which Congress hasn't raised in 9 long years. That minimum wage worker makes $10,713 per year. Each of your bonuses, forget the rest of it, each of your bonuses was more than 300 times greater than a minimum wage worker's annual pay.
Senator Dorgan from North Dakota expressed the idea that high profit gains of oil companies, including high compensation paid to their executives, create a situation that hardly resembles free market.
Your profits are very handsome. In fact, your individual compensation is very substantial. You're doing really well. The consumers bear the brunt of a market that is not free, and your companies at this point are experiencing very substantial profits as a result of it. I think most consumers find it terribly unfair.
Environmental groups that held a press conference after the hearing expressed dissatisfaction with its outcome. Dave Hamilton, Director of Global Warming and Energy Program at Sierra Club.
There are essentially three results: no responsibility, no accountability, and no remorse. If you listen to the heads of our largest corporations, they take no responsibility for the fact that their refining profits, not cost, but profits, doubled this year before Katrina and then tripled after Katrina. They have no responsibility for the Americans who will have to choose between basic needs, whether they be food, clothing, or warmth. They won't consider taking responsibility for helping fund the low-income heating assistance program. This hearing today was not an attempt to hold ExxonMobil and other oil companies accountable for what has happened over the past several months. This was a kabuki play by the leadership to save itself from plummeting poll numbers.
Some analysts say today's hearing is a result of a culmination of public outcry by the Republicans that risk being the victims of a public backlash during the election of 2006. However, it is unlikely that this hearing will translate into any actual legislative action against the companies. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Anastasia Gnezditska in Washington, D.C.
Free Speech Radio News is produced at Pacifica Stations, KPFA in Berkeley, and KPFA in Los Angeles. Free Speech Radio News is an independent, worker-run collective. For more information, check out our website at www.fsrn.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Aura Bogado.